All right, class, we're back. This is Optimus Fields at My Living True, and we're at block height 636,352, and the price is currently 9,259. Take it away, Nick.
What's up, guys? It's Nick here. Sorry, I wasn't here last week. I had work stuff I had to do, but I feel really good to be back this week. Without any further ado, let's let our guests introduce themselves and let's get started. Jestifer, you want to kick us off with that?
Hey, everybody. Jestifer here in Portland, Oregon.
Let's go. Bobo.
Hey, everyone. Bobo Dread from Kingston, Jamaica.
Let's go. Jamie.
Yo, what's up? It's Jamie from Jupiter, Florida.
Let's go. Jim. Did we lose Jim?
What? Oh, am I up?
Yeah.
Sorry. I didn't hear. The sound was low. I don't know. Yeah. Surfer Jim here from Long Island, New York. Thanks for having me.
Let's go. And last but certainly not least, Nabismo.
Hey guys, it's Nabismo coming live from Massachusetts.
Let's go.
Let's go.
All right, so I think the first question we can have Nick started off a little bit because you were just in the drinks with quarantine, and it was a question that you had last week, and it's who funds Bitcoin developments? So maybe you can start us off on that one.
So a lot of Bitcoin developers will work, like literally just volunteer work for free. And a lot of the Bitcoin development comes from within the community. Like there have been hundreds of thousands of dollars being passed around to different companies. Like BTC Pay Server got $150,000 a few weeks ago. And then just, I think yesterday or the day before, they got another $150,000. And they're just from companies like inside Bitcoin. So pretty much Bitcoin, like the exchange Kraken just gave them $150,000. Everyone just supports each other and wants to, you know, help Bitcoin grow as best as possible. And the funding for Bitcoin development just comes from within.
Yeah, it's like kind of how we do the show, you know, volunteer work. People just take the time out of their days to do something that they think is important. And yeah, you know, that's what we do. Let's see. Yesterday we got a few good questions from one of our local pre-coiners or new coiners actually. And it's, what's a good way to prevent a $5 wrench attack? So there's a lot of different ways we can tackle this one, but you know, I think as Nick would say, one of his favorite ways is to make sure that you've got some guns if you're in the States. And then obviously, you know, hide your seeds, make sure those are backed up, maybe in some encrypted files. Don't tell people that you have Bitcoins, or at least that you know, have them stored in a certain place. Try to keep some privacy on that one. Or if you're a little more technical, you can get on multisig, get multiple keys to your Bitcoins. Or we're gonna get a presentation soon with Jestifer on how to set up a Tails OS USB drive so that you can basically have your Bitcoins on a USB stick on a specific OS and plug it into any computer and do some Bitcoin business. So what are your guys' thoughts? Don't tell us your particular setups, but what do you think are the best practices?
I can chime in here a minute. I think maintaining somewhat low profile is definitely one of the best measures you can take to avoiding that. And certainly not drawing attention to yourself that you have, if you have a lot of Bitcoin. But I mean, that's really what gets people's attention and motivates them to do something like that. And a lot of security setups are going to fail with that very simple attack. Somebody, some thug just showing up and being like, listen, I know you have Bitcoin. Give me, you know, whatever you have. Or I would definitely keep things on a hardware wallet and hidden somewhere really well. But there are, I don't know. I think a $5 wrench attack, the easiest way to just prevent against it is not letting people know that you have Bitcoin. Like, not, I mean, we've all kind of doxed ourselves by going on Bitcoin Twitter, but not making it like, I'm guilty of this sometimes too, because I do wear like some Bitcoin clothing, but like, you know, you're going to gain attention in public if you're out there like all decked out in like Bitcoin stuff or something. And there's somebody's going to catch you slipping at some point. And I hope that doesn't happen to anybody. I don't personally know anyone that it's happened to, but it's certainly a very plausible situation.
Yeah, avoid the like iHoto license plates and maybe Bitcoin stickers on your car. I did hear of a story in 2017 coming out of like Russia where some YouTube influencer got like robbed and murdered for a bunch of Bitcoin. So it's an actual threat out there. But yeah, I don't know.
I got a thought.
Get it, Jim.
So we've all doxed ourselves to one extent or another, depending on if our faces have been online, you know, our voices are here right now. We just all said where we're from, right? So, you know, yeah, I'm on Long Island. It's a big place. There's a lot of people. Are you really going to find me? All right. So can I be tracked? Can any of us be tracked by the right person with the right enough money, found physically and then attacked? Absolutely. You know, if the right person wants to do that. But like, how big of a target are you? So if you make it seem like you're not that big of a target, you know, it's not worth it to some people. So none of us, I assume, are whales with hundreds or thousands of Bitcoin. So that right there is already going to put us at, you know, lower risk. Although when the price of Bitcoin goes way up, having just one could make a huge difference. So my advice would be that for all those people who know you have Bitcoin or are into it, like I am, I never shut up about it. The idea is that you're way ahead of these people. We all literally are way ahead of these people. So we all know way more than they know, right? So if they think they're going to rob us, at first they got to figure out, well, how would I even do it? What am I looking for? How do I find these Bitcoin? So they got to get themselves educated. You might actually get into Bitcoin at that point and start buying some. But the point is they got to figure out how they're going to get it, right? So they figure out how they're going to get it. Oh, I got to find the guy's hardware wallet, or I got to find his private key, or this or that or the other thing. Are they going to know to keep going and figure out this thing called multi-sig? Are they going to know that Caravan could hold one of the keys and they will not release it unless I physically call them and they hear my voice? Like, you could set up anything. And so what? How are they going to know how to get the bit? You can give them your seed phrase and let them leave with it. Doesn't mean they'll ever get your Bitcoin if you got it secured correctly. So, you know, hopefully we're all smart enough to be 5, 10, 20 steps ahead of them, but make it known that you are. Like, tell people, like when they say, well, how do you hold Bitcoin or anything? You say, oh boy, it gets complicated if you really want to make it safe, but it can be really easy because you can just get Cash App and leave it right there until you got a lot. And then I can show you what to do, blah, blah, blah. But you make it seem like they're never going to find your Bitcoin anyway. So you gotta create a very small attack surface in the sense that, or a very expensive attack surface where somebody's got to make a big effort to get yours and they'd rather go after somebody else. So use your smarts, knowing about this industry, this ecosystem, and deflect the ability for them to want to come after you. Go for somebody else. There you go.
You could even buy some decoy wallets. So let's say they like hit you over, they surprise attack you, hit you over the head or something. And there's, you know, telling you, give me your wallet or else I'm going to, you know, kill you or, you know, seriously hurt you. You give them a blank cold card. You know, the idiot just runs off with it thinking he's, oh my God, I just stole this guy's Bitcoin, you know, and you get away safely. Also, like, it is pretty, like, sometimes, like.
Nick, hold up a second. if they get to the point where they know what they're looking for, a hardware wallet or whatever, they're going to stop and make you transfer the Bitcoin off that hardware wallet to their address. They're not going to run away with the hardware wallet. They're either going to want to get into it. You got to show them the PIN. They're going to do a transaction because Bitcoin's instantaneous. They got a hardware wallet on their phone. They're going to just say, right now, scan this, send it to me. Right? So you got to say, like, I can't. It's locked. You know, call Caravan. Yeah. They'll tell you. Call, yeah. You know, call CASA. So just, you know, take it a step further than now, nothing wrong with a decoy wallet at all. No question about it, especially to say, look, I got robbed. I had to spend it. I had an emergency. This is all I got left here. Take it. You know, you can make up any story you want. But you can also try to make it so that they wouldn't even want to try. I was listening to it. It's sort of a side note, but it pertains. I was listening to a podcast today. Tom Woods, he does a podcast almost every day. And he's interviewing a guy who's a security specialist. So he has a business where he will be security, make sure nothing happens to your area, your apartment complex, your business, whatever. And their whole approach is, never escalate anything, diffuse everything, lower your attack surface, and they have like this really awesome spotless record for 25 years in Detroit of keeping their clients perfectly safe, all their belongings perfectly safe from criminals and all this. And he's got all these special techniques, and it's the concept that you make it so hard for somebody to bother with you, they just don't bother. So. Continue. Sorry.
You'll have to link one us thing, that podcast.
Well, the podcast is Tom Woods. I can look for it on my phone because I just listened to it today, I think.
Yeah, put that in the chat phone when you get a chance. But continue, Nick.
Oh, okay. I
was just going to say one thing. Like, I feel like not every single attacker is going to, you know exactly everything about Bitcoin. Like, I feel like some people are going to be like, okay, like, hey, I just heard this Bitcoin thing hit 100K. I've seen a guy down at the, you know, coffee shop wearing a t-shirt, you know, let's rob him and see if he has anything on him. And, you know, not everyone may be educated on it, because a lot of people, I feel like, who may be educated on it might think like, wow, like the success rate of actually, you know, stealing someone's Bitcoin could be pretty low. So, I mean, it could go either way.
And knowing the culture, like, I might get shot.
Yeah. I mean, guns are very popular amongst Bitcoiners, but, which is fucking awesome.
I think Jim kind of brought up a good point. We were just talking to Corey Clipston this week about Swan, and I asked him, does he believe that Bitcoin is still, or does he believe that Bitcoin has a chance of getting 6102'd, executive order 6102'd? And he kind of, he basically said what Jim said earlier, that, you know, with enough saturation of Bitcoiners around the world, that, you know, the more Bitcoiners we have, then the less chance of, you know, people coming to rob us, they'll be, you know, it's so many Bitcoiners that they won't be able to ban Bitcoin. And it kind of, I think I've said this a few times before, where like half of me is so paranoid of not telling people that I'm a Bitcoiner. And then the other half of me is just an evangelist and just wants everyone to buy Bitcoin. And so it's a fine line of, you know, being vocal about being a Bitcoiner and then protecting your OPSEC. So do you guys think that at a certain point in the few recent years, in the next, I don't know, 4 years or so, that with enough Bitcoiners, it'll just be so normal that people, it'll be the same as dollars, you know? They're not like, celebrities aren't getting robbed at their house for their wealth, because they know that there's institutions in place for them to not really transfer over that wealth. And so it'll just be the same amount of normal crime that we see today, but the money's Bitcoin instead of dollars or gold or et cetera. So what do you think, what's your point on that? Point of view on that point?
I'll chime in. I think, well, robbing and like stuff like that will basically be fundamentally changed. I mean, think of it in the eyes of a robber, right? If you want to go up to this guy and grab his money, You just walk out to him, probably hit him over the head and grab his wallet and run. That doesn't take a lot of time. But if you were to, nowadays, there's Cash App and there's Venmo and there's Bitcoin and there's this and that. If you were to hit him over the head, talk to him, hey, unlock your phone, unlock this, enter the password, do this, do that, scan my code. That takes time, and probably the police or whatever are already coming your way. I mean, so I'm just going to wonder what that's going to evolve into, because time is everything for a criminal, pretty much.
Yeah, I heard that. Jimbo was in here one day, not live, but we were just sitting in the Discord, and he said something on the same lines of, a robbery usually takes place around 8 minutes. So, you know, they just kind of come in and out and try to get in and out as quick as possible. And maybe one day he'll be in and he'll have what he was talking about, some ideas on securing that. But Jester, you want to chime in? Saw you unmuted yourself.
Sure, yeah. You can't even get a confirmation in 8 minutes. A friend of mine used to work in HR for a marijuana dispensary that was, you know, a legal one in California. And she was just, you know, sharing the story with me that, you know, she has to manage all the payments to all the employees. They have to get paid in cash because the banks won't allow them to create accounts because the feds don't want to have anything to do with this Schedule I drug called marijuana. I was asking her a couple of questions about it, and you know, she shared that the employees get paid monthly. So that means at one point on payday, there's, you know, all these like 20 some employees monthly salary, like all in a safe somewhere in cash, which is just a crazy amount of risk versus, you know, Bitcoin. You've got 12 words on a piece of paper that if you really know what to do with it, then you can take that money. But other than that, I mean, most of the time we're exchanging addresses. So you don't, which isn't really, there's no scary information. No one can take your money if they know your address. They can just maybe see if you received any money or not. So that's, as far as risk models, Bitcoin is a massive improvement over cash. I think Nibismo makes a good point about just, you know, not really announcing that you have Bitcoin, because I used to have this bright orange Bitcoin backpack that says buy Bitcoin on the back of it. I wore it every single day to work. And then someone pointed out to me like, oh, well, someone can just, you know, follow you home and hit you over the head with a $5 wrench until you give them the password. So now I've been thinking a lot more about multi-signature wallets, and which is also useful for inheritance planning. If just in case anything happens to me, I want to be able to make sure like my family and my loved ones are able to access what I have without one person being able to take care, control of all of it.
Yeah, smart. You guys are reminding me of the saying, the millionaire next door. You know, just keep a low profile and, you know, live the good life and not floss all your money. But we'll move on to the next one. I think we kind of talked on that one really good.
Got a quick spin on that.
Yeah, get it, Bubba.
I think this is more of a question to everybody, because I've been thinking about this $5 wrench attack. And, you know, I take it back to 3,000-4,000 years ago when gold was really, you know, the old days Bitcoin, where people would walk around with sacks of gold attached to their belts, right? Like, you're a merchant and you'd literally walk around with your wealth on your person. And you know, I wonder back then how people would prevent a $5 wrench attack. How would society prevent people from just being bonked over the head repeatedly all day and getting their wealth taken from them? You know, how would that apply to today's gold stack, which is our 12-word phrase on your belt? And I feel like it has something to do with a change in the culture of you know, knowing that everyone is eventually going to be walking around with their own wealth, with, you know, with their own 12 words. But, you know, what other security can we have apart from caravan, apart from knowing you have guns? You know, what's the peaceful way to make sure that a $5 inch tag doesn't happen?
That's a good question. I'm not really sure what the security measures were in the past, but off the top of my head, I can only think that one of the risks was, I guess, people more willing to kill each other over it. It's like, you know, if you're trying to steal my property a few thousand years ago, it might have been a little easier to just like shoot the guy or kill the guy and take back your property. And today in society, we have a lot more stigmatism on that versus, and not only like legalities behind that. So I'm not sure, to be honest. I have no idea. I'd have to look into that. Anyone have has a point of view on that?
Jeff said, speak softly and carry a big stick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to look into that. That's an interesting point. Justifer?
Yeah, Nicholas Nassim Taleb, you know, he's always going for, you know, becoming a bodybuilder. I mean, he's just becoming physically intimidating, which, I mean, that's one way to do it. The other way, as some of the other community members, I've listened to their story on how they secure their Bitcoin. And, you know, one of them has a multi-sig, and he just has the keys at different banks that you would actually have to drive to. So it's a time prevention. And, you know, the one thing that banks are really good at is physical security. So they can, you know, keep the things that you care about safe. And if you have to go to multiple of them and someone is going to have to drive with you and, you know, hold you at gunpoint or whatever, you'd still be prevented against that type of attack because, hey, they're watching the banks all the time.
Plus, like, cameras and having their faces seen and all that good stuff. Jim, you trying to chime in?
Well, I was going to agree with that. You know, this is kind of elaborating on what I said earlier, that if you set it up this way, or even say you set it up this way, you know, sort of as you're talking about Bitcoin, you're alluding to the fact that, you know, I've got this crazy setup where no one can even rob me. You almost brag about it. I can't even get robbed. You got to go to three different banks. You got a CID. I mean, no robber's going to drive me around for 2 hours. Like, you say that as a part of a story. People go, really? You can do that with your money? You could secure it? Like, I don't have to worry? You know, as you're selling the idea of Bitcoin, you can also be planting the seed that they're never getting yours. But you can also do all those things, obviously. And what Bobo was saying about people in the past, I think at different times in the past, there was always different levels of security. So in the smallest level of tribes or, you know, families out on the prairies, you know, you had strong men with a gun or some other weapon to defend, you know, that's all you could do. And then as cities started to develop, you could get groups of people helping each other out, you know, and eventually police forces and whatnot. So there's always been risk, obviously, people that could never protect themselves, just as today there's still people that can't, you know, they get killed or stolen from because they, no matter how hard they try, they can't protect themselves. They don't have the knowledge or the resources, or they're not allowed to arm themselves because some government says you can't own a gun, like stupid crap like that. If everybody was allowed to own a gun, then the risk of getting robbed is going to go way down because the guy's going to go, well, he's probably got a gun. Maybe I better not, you know? So, like, there's all kinds of misaligned incentives that allow for certain crime to happen in the first place. So, you know, as Bitcoiners, I think the things we can do are everything we just discussed, you know, keep a small footprint and deflect and, you know, and really secure your stuff well, obviously.
Wisdom. You said a good point. That's a good segue. You said different levels of security. And we have a question over here that is, do I have to have a hardware wallet, or is there other ways to secure my Bitcoins? And as we, you know, stated, there are other ways to secure your Bitcoins, like multisig or what have you. And my point of view when it comes to hardware wallets is, you know, if you're willing to invest, you know, or the way I heard it, actually, the best way is, depending on how much money you have in Bitcoin, then you should, you know, put in some effort depending on how much you have saved. So if you don't have that much, maybe some free services such as like a phone wallet or just downloading Bitcoin Core is the way to go. But if you have most of your life savings in Bitcoin, then you should probably step up into a hardware wallet. Or you can just be like some of our Bitcoin friends and just have paper wallets and brain wallets. But what's your guys' point of view? I know Nick's a fan of Cold Card.
I love Cold Card. I would not recommend a brain wallet for long-term storage. It's just, you know, it's so easy to forget your passphrase, and especially, like, you know, if you fall on the ground or you fall down the stairs or playing sports and you hit your head and you lose your memory, your Bitcoin's gone forever. But if you're going to store your Bitcoin, definitely you can either store it on a hardware wallet, and I highly recommend Cold Card for, you know, a lot of Bitcoin. If I would also recommend not this for I wouldn't put too much on this, but like your phone is also a great place to store Bitcoin. Like even Andreas Antonopoulos was talking about, like, your phone is one of, you know, your most well protected devices you have. So like I use Blue Wallet. I know they're Blue Wallet's just what works for me, and it allows me to have my own, you know, keys. If you make a wallet and it doesn't ask you to write down, you know, 12 to 24 words, that's a huge red flag, because it means that it's not your key, so it's not your coins. So yeah, anyone else want to chime in?
I agree. The wallet on your phone is awesome. It's really secure. The only downside is that the $5 wrench attack doesn't have to wait for you to go home to start hitting you in the head. But, you know, apart from that, it's a really good way to start with.
I want to like meet people who like actually memorize their 12 words, because I can't memorize what I had for breakfast this morning. So. I mean,
well, yeah. So,
the wave, I know some people do it, is they put it in a song, and once you know the words to the song, you know the words to your wallet.
Yeah, but what if you like accidentally hum your song in like public and people go, oh, well,
you don't do that. I mean, I've remembered a scene. I've done it. And the way that I did it was I would remember three words at a time. And so every day I would remember the three words. I would look at it and remember the three words. And then once I could remember those words, you know, like in the particular sequence, then I would do the next three words. And then once I remembered those three words, and I would just keep moving on. And I think it took me about like a week or two to remember them. And yeah, it's kind of like put it in the song, but.
Do you still remember them?
I do. And I kind of, I like.
Where is it?
Oh yeah. I'm about to. No. I do remember them.
What were they again?
Yeah, exactly.
We want to be sure you remember them. Go ahead.
Yeah. Here we go. I'm about to drop it. No, I like would refresh my memory every couple of weeks or so just to make sure I did remember them. But yeah, my setup has changed, and so I've yet to do that again to my latest setup. But I think I'll probably do that once I'm like find the setup that I feel I want to keep for a little while. So yeah, I've done it.
I think anybody could remember anything if it's important enough. I used to have to force myself to remember people's names because I was in a sales job way when I was much younger. I've remembered all kinds of credit card numbers and bank account numbers for years and years. Phone numbers, before I had a cell phone, I had to remember dozens and dozens of phone numbers. And you just figure out a way. Like I didn't use any particular technique. I think that's a good one you use there with the three words at a time. And the song, what Bobo said before, I've heard that before. I had this thought, I hadn't heard it anywhere else. And I think there's probably software out there that could help you do this. If you took a big enough book, you could probably find all the seed words in that book, and you could probably find them in the right order, scattered amongst all the pages. If you had a program that could scan the words in a file like that, which I'm sure you could. And if you found a famous enough book and figured out a way to say, remember the page number, or something like that, or some other way to remember. You could even leave a copy of this book with those pages with the seed words highlighted, or some notation at the bottom of the page that tells you how to find the seed word on that page, like some cryptic thing. And you could leave that for somebody, like an heir. Look, you got to go get this book. This is the instructions on how to find my seed. It's going to take some work. I mean, you could do all kinds of wacky things, but you could do that as a way to have your seed stored in a place no one would ever look for it. You know, they're looking for a seed storage device, not a book with words scattered around it. So like, there's a million different ways you could do this. That might be a little complicated, but it's just an odd one that came to my mind.
Yeah, that's pretty genius. Like a Da Vinci Code right there.
Yeah, but you know, if you could find a book where the words that you needed were in the right order and they were the very first word on every page, on those particular pages, like something really cool like that. Not that you could, that'd be really hard. But I bet you, you know, these are common English words. I bet you could find books that have every seed word, or at least 12 or 24. But you might have to go through hundreds of books before you found a book that had your 24 words in it, especially in order. So, yeah. But I feel like it's possible. There's so much literature out there. You never know. And a computer can scan stuff in milliseconds. So.
Yeah, well, don't put your seeds on a computer, though.
No, the thing is, you'd have to be able to write a program, right? You could download a PDF file, so you're doing it on an offline computer with a software you wrote, and you're putting the words on just that one computer through software you wrote, and it's scanning the book just on that computer, not connected to the internet. You have full control of everything it's doing. No, you'd have to be like a developer to make it happen. But once you found it, nobody would know where to look for that thing.
Yeah, I'd agree. And this just reminded me, what are some of your guys' favorite phone wallets? I don't really have too many phone wallets, but one wallet that I do use a lot is Zeus for Lightning. But yeah, what do you guys, what's your favorite phones, wallets, and what OS do you have on your phone?
Go ahead.
Oh, let's see. Yeah, my favorite to recommend to folks that are just getting started, that's cross-platform, is Blockstream Green Wallet. But I really like Electrum myself. Super flexible, and you can do a deposit only with a public key.
I have two. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say I have a Tinker, so I have a ton of them. You know, blue, green, Breeze, Pine, but the one I use the most is Blue Wallet. Like Nick said, it's really good, and it has both Lightning and Bitcoin on chain. I really like that one. And then I have a Pixel, where I kind of keep all the add-on stuff.
Nice. And can you, I keep forgetting, but can you add a full node with Blue Wallet?
No.
No? Oh, okay. I thought you could. All right. Nabismo?
I was going to say, I have two phones, a burner Android phone, just so I can have Samurai Wallet. I love that. But I also have like Zap Wallet, Zeus, Wallet of Satoshi, Blue Wallet. I forgot like one or two other ones too. I just like tinkering with them and seeing what's different about them and the different UX and UI.
And you have Strike yet?
What was that?
Do I have what?
Strike.
I wish.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't have it.
Are you running a dojo?
I am not.
Tis. how about you? Any? I think we named all the wallets, to be honest. The only one I remember is Fully Noted. It's pretty good on iOS. I'd recommend that if you guys have a full node you want to connect to. What about you, Jamie?
I don't really keep my Bitcoin on my phone at all. The only wallet I have is just some small Lightning wallet. It's a Satoshi, let me look it up. Wallet of Satoshi. It was recommended by Joe Rogers. He told me to get that for his newsletter faucet. Yeah.
And this is a good segue since we've just been talking about Lightning. We have this question: do you think we'll see Hyper Lightning implementation simultaneously with Hyper Bitcoinization? And I think this was Jestifer that brought this up. So, what's your thoughts on that one, Jestifer? And we'll start the combo.
Oh, I'm not sure if this one was me, but
was it Abismo? Oh, it was one of you two. I could have sworn it was one of you guys. But yeah, anyways.
I'm thinking Lightning will definitely take off as soon as the fees for transactions on chain increase. When people realize, like, hey, I do want instant settlement, and I don't want to wait 10 minutes for a confirmation. So, Lightning is the payments layer for Bitcoin to make instant settlement possible. And I think it will happen. I'm really excited about apps like Fold to really incentivize Lightning adoption just through discounts on buying things.
Yeah, I'm really hyped for Ellen Strike. I can't wait for that to be out of beta or at least public. But I think my opinion on this issue is I think we'll see a lot more Lightning use before quote unquote hyper Bitcoinization happens, because I don't think we'll be having hyper Bitcoinization within the next, or I mean hyper Lightning coinization or whatever, within the next bull run. Oh wait, hold on, I mixed that up. I don't think we'll have hyper Bitcoinization within the next bull run or the next halving. But I do believe that once the price goes up, we'll be seeing a lot more Lightning use. And I don't know if that's like hyper Lightning implementation, but I think it'll be a lot more common for people to be using Lightning, and we'll have Lightning be, touted as much as people are trying to claim shitcoin are the way now. So I think we'll be seeing a lot more Lightning use pretty soon. And then I think we're still a ways off from hyper Bitcoinization. So I think Lightning will catch on before quote unquote hyper Bitcoinization. But what are your guys' thoughts?
I agree.
Let's go.
I agree too, for sure.
Same here.
Yeah, I agree. I just want to point out, did you guys hear about the PayPal and Venmo?
Yeah,
Bitcoin integration coming up. I'm pretty sure Cash App doesn't use Lightning though, right?
No, not yet.
So I think a big step would be for one of those big companies like Venmo or Cash App to integrate Lightning support, and that would be very, very big. Because I know a couple of people that like have heard me talk about Bitcoin, they kind of shrug it off. But once they see that they can buy Bitcoin directly through their Cash App that they already have installed, it opens up to a lot more people. So I think the PayPal integration coming up, quarter four of 2020, I think it's coming out. Once that comes out, I feel like we'll see some adoption, but not like mass adoption. Just a little bit more than we have right now.
I agree. Yeah. And I really think we underestimate the experience that people are going to have. Like right now, if you compare buying Bitcoin on Swan, which fees are amazingly cheap and I love it, you compare it to buying or sending or receiving Bitcoin from River Financial, because they have Lightning integrated. And you can like send your Bitcoin to a Lightning wallet. The difference is amazing when you just see your Bitcoin immediately show up. And I think newbies are going to love that compared to having to wait for a confirmation.
Yeah, because I assume no one knows. A majority of people don't know how the mining works or the confirmations. They'll just see it as, oh, I sent you money. We'll just boil it down to that pretty much. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've had that happen a couple of times when I've sent a friend Bitcoin and then they receive it and then they're like, wait, this says unconfirmed. What does that mean? And then I get to explain that it's actually a market where all the transactions are kind of competing to be in a block and all the miners are competing to get as many transactions, high fee paying transactions into their block as they can. It's always a good conversation.
Probably one-sided, though, right?
All right. Well, yeah, I think we hashed that one out a little bit. This next question, group of questions, comes from Bobo, and he was getting a lot of FUD from his group of normies, or his pre-coiners, and the first one will be, what if governments make Bitcoin illegal? What then? Anyone want to jump in first?
It doesn't matter if they make Bitcoin illegal. Like, they make drugs illegal. It's still widely used. It's still very easy to get. Bitcoin does not give a fuck what the government says about it. It just keeps, you know, it keeps on producing blocks and it keeps on working. And honestly, if the government wanted to ban Bitcoin, that would be an incredibly bullish time for Bitcoin. And I think we would see, I mean, who knows if we would see a temporary sell-off. We probably would, because there's a lot of weak hands out there. But the strong hands would just buy it right back up and the price would go up over time. Yeah. If, like, you gotta think, Bitcoin is so pure, and it was made for such the right purposes, for the benefit of the user, and not, you know, people at the top. If the government wants to ban Bitcoin, like, you should see that as a huge red flag in their intentions.
Yeah, and also, just to add on to what Nick said, We have to be very specific on what we mean by government, because it's like, okay, if one government tries to ban Bitcoin, well, that just, you know, hinders their citizens, and it's not like the rest of the world is going to stop doing it because a certain government bans it. We've already seen the China ban. So we've said it a few times on this pod that it would be a Herculean effort for every government to agree simultaneously to ban Bitcoins in their country. So that's, you know, and when we said that, we talked about them shutting down Bitcoin. But in this scenario, you know, some Bitcoiners in specific regions could get hurt or facing fines or jail times or what have you, because their government is being tyrannical. But as Nick said, it's definitely good PR for why we need Bitcoin in the first place. And so Bitcoin users will just go underground and, you know, route around the system as best we can and hopefully survive the scenario. And soon enough, the legality will get repelled, or illegality will get repaired. But Jim, you kind of went in on this a little before. So you want to chime in a little bit?
Sorry, I was focused on something else again. What was the question? I'm sorry.
What if governments made Bitcoin illegal?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right. Yeah, we were talking about this earlier. Thanks. Yeah, I think, you know, if one government tries, everybody else will laugh at first. You know, the rest of the world will just keep going. Bitcoin mining is not going to stop. You can't shut it off. It's in too many places. The computers are in too many places. So all the governments of the world would have to get together and do it. And even if a government decided to make it completely illegal under threat of death if they catch you using it, you know, those citizens would suffer if they wanted to comply. And that would suck for them. And I don't see how this government could do it in this country. And then you got the aspect of government officials themselves, which are just regular people, especially the ones that aren't even in government yet, that end up owning Bitcoin. You know, then they get in government or they're in Bitcoin, in government and they own some Bitcoin. And, you know, they don't want to shoot themselves in the foot by making it illegal or whatever. So I think it's a pretty uphill battle to say that one day governments the world over are going to ban Bitcoin. It's going to go to zero. Nah, I don't see that.
Let's go. Bullish. Yeah, we also touched on that with Corey Clipston. We just released a video, and he is kind of on the same boat that with enough Bitcoin saturation, with enough Bitcoiners, you know, with the intransigent minority that Talib always talks about, that the governments will have to bend to us because, you know, Bitcoin's our money and it's better money, and we, you know, governments are supposed to rule what the people say, and, you know, we'll just steamroll them eventually. But the next question is very similar, and it says, what if the government try to buy and hoard all the Bitcoins? What would you say to that?
Oh, I got a good response here. We were talking just before about storing Bitcoin. And there was a government in Europe, man, I really wish I could think of the exact country, but they confiscated some Bitcoin from some drug people or whatever, you know, like a lot, like 100,000 Bitcoin, like, and it was more than their entire country's national debt. And somehow it all just disappeared. Imagine that. You know, like, they didn't pay off the national debt with it. The government still doesn't have it. People in government got it somehow. Like, it was private keys and somebody who figured out what to do and, oh, poof, what happened? Yeah, like, governments are not going to be able to control Bitcoin, like, easily, because it's just going to get stolen from people on the inside, man. Are you kidding? Like, the accountability necessary to track and hold Bitcoin at a government level and pay all the millions of departments and the millions of workers that work for government, oh, yeah, right. That'll take, like, generations to develop, if it ever can. I laugh at the concept of our government using Bitcoin to run the entire government. I just laugh. I just can't imagine. I don't see it. I've never seen it in my lifetime. Hell no. There's no way they'll get it together in the next like 30 years if I'm lucky to live that long. So there's no way.
And we can already see Venezuela is now accepting Bitcoins for their passports or what have you. So you can already see
They'll accept it all day long, right. But they're not going to run the government on it. They're going to start disappearing. Are you kidding me? You think the citizens are going to get a look at their addresses of where they're holding it so they can keep government accountable? Hell no.
Nick, did you want to chime in or Jessifer?
I was just going to say, if they're going to try and buy up as much Bitcoin as they can, they're literally helping the network and making everyone else richer, because the more they buy, the less scarce the, you know, Bitcoin becomes, the more valuable your coins become, and over time number go up, making you wealthier.
You know, Nick, you know what's interesting about that is governments have every incentive to get into Bitcoin for that exact reason, and even to make it known, because they can, you know, the people that are going to do it, the actual deciders, they're going to be the ones in control of the hardware wallets, and they're going to be the ones that decide what they show to the public and this and that. And then, because they're doing it, another country, blah, 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 and they literally can make the price go up on the exact thing that they've invested in, especially if they accumulate without saying anything, as some people do surmise. You'll hear other people talk about that, like, oh, yeah, there's probably some governments slowly accumulating. So they can get a bunch before it does that, because as soon as they announce it, the price is going through the roof. What, a government of the world thinks this Bitcoin is real? What? Oh, forget it. Stampede to the door. How much can I get? It's going to be crazy. But, you know, they can never corner the market. Wasn't that the question? It was like, you know, what if they, or was that something we were talking about earlier? I forget. I don't see any government being able to get so much Bitcoin they can control the market. I don't see that ever happening. I don't even see that happening for any individual. And some of the people that have the most Bitcoin are individuals right now. And I don't think they're going to start to like rule the world just because they own all that Bitcoin. It's going to disperse out into the world as they die and leave it to other people or spend it to live on or whatever. Bitcoin will eventually get dispersed all around. Some people always have more and some people always have less because that's just how people are. But I don't think any one country or any one individual ever can ever just rule the world because they have so much Bitcoin.
I agree.
Good old topic there.
Agreed. Jesper?
I really can't wait to get that government notice announcing the exchange rate that they will be buying my Bitcoin. Because it'll be, that response would be someone like, something like, you know, one, what Bitcoin? I lost all mine in a boating accident. And then two, I'm not fucking selling.
Yeah,
let's go.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Jesper, is like, if I heard that a government or a rumor that a government was trying to corner the market, I wouldn't be selling my Bitcoins. I would be holding on to them for dear life, and I would, you know, ride up that price as far as humanly possible and just, you know, try to withstand the urge to sell them, because if they're getting into the game, then everything we've ever said in the past, it just makes us that much more right. And number go up, and, you know, they can't stop my money, the censorship resistant properties of Bitcoin. It's, you know, it would just be like, okay, like Bitcoin's finally here. Like, let's enjoy the ride, boys, because we made it. And they're not going to get these Bitcoins, so they can buy all 21 million and or 20 something million in change, but they won't get my little measly pile. And hey, I you know, I'll be the only one with Bitcoins, and I'll interact with the government, like, so be it.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing, is a lot of people feel that way. I bet everybody here feels that way. If the government puts a price on it, we're smart enough to hold, unless you're at the end of your life and you're starting to cash them out anyway. You know, there's a point where, you know, this thing, an item to store your productivity, you know, your value or your wealth. At some point, unless you just have so much and you're living off something else, there could be a day where you're going to not necessarily sell it for fiat money, but sell it for goods and services, get rid of it and live off of it. And, you know, each person has to decide how much they have and how long it'll last and when to start spending. But, you know, eventually, hopefully we'll be living in a world where you can buy anything you need very easily using Bitcoin at, you know, a fraction of what we have now is all that'll be needed to buy what we need, you know, so therefore it could last a lifetime or some long period of time. You younger guys, you have the ability to save for like the next 10 years and then maybe retire. You know, if you can put away enough Bitcoin, it might only take, you know, 5 or 10 if you can get that many, you know. But in the next 10 years, if you had that many and then you wait another 10 years or something, that could be all you need for the rest of your life. That would give you a lot of coasting room. You know, you could start spending a few sats at a time. You never know what it could do. I don't know. Continue, fellas. That was my thoughts.
Man, bullish, boys. I think we're totally going to make it. I think we're going to make it. anyone want to chime in a little more? And then we can move on if not.
That just reassures like my thinking. Like, I always think to myself, man, I could just work hard in my youth, stack for, you know, like 10 years, and potentially retire super early, you know, and like live a pretty, you know, lavish lifestyle. And it's nice hearing like,
so, Nick, there's a thing that people that work in the insurance industry do. They're known as actuaries, and they calculate the statistical probability of how long you're going to live. And that's how they figure out the rates for insurance. And insurance companies sell things called annuities, which you dump a bunch of money in at some point, And when you decide to take it back out, they're going to calculate how long you're going to live, and they're going to divide it up and say, okay, you get this much every month for the rest of your life. And we guarantee it. And then if you die early, maybe there'll be a little bit left over for somebody else. You could do that calculation. You know, you could find somebody to do it for you or whatever. Based on the amount of accumulated wealth you have, you could say, well, how long would that last me? You know, you're 30, 35, 40. You're like, all right, I got what amounts to, you know, 3 million in purchasing power, but it might be 10 million in 3 years. So if I only spend a little now, but, and you could do this calculation where as you're getting older, you have a smaller amount, but each unit keeps getting worth more. So it's almost like the balance stays the same, but you have less of them, you know, so you can keep spending and spending and you still got the same amount of money almost. So you could do that, and it's, you know, it could be worth it someday if you want to see if you can do it, you know, if you got enough of a cushion, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. One thing I also think about is, like, you could retire, and when I mean retire, you could, like, retire from a job that you would absolutely need otherwise if you didn't have the wealth from Bitcoin. And, like, let's say if you wanted to get another job that doesn't pay as much, but it's something you're passionate about, you could do that. So, you know, you don't, it's a job, but you don't really feel like you're working. You know what I mean?
Yeah. If you're not already working in a job you love and you're doing it either for the money or for some other reason, you know, that certainly makes a lot of sense. Obviously, I think it's worth always doing something, working at something, bringing value to yourself or other people. Certainly leisure is good. You know, I like to surf. That doesn't do much for anybody else but me. But, you know, to do just nothing because you're wealthy and just sit around and eat and drink and get high or whatever people do, you know, like, I think most people would want to do something anyway. So if you do something you're passionate about and it happens to, you know, make you a couple bucks, but you really don't need much of it, that's certainly a great goal right there.
Also the cultural aspect. Because like here, and I know it's in India as well, there's social pressure to do jobs, like prestigious jobs, like doctors and engineers. I mean, even if some of them that don't even make that much money in our countries, you still want to do it because it puts you in good standing amongst your family, your friends, your peers. So even after, you know, you decide to retire and you have a job, or if you are a doctor in those countries and you have enough to retire, you probably won't. You'll probably still be a doctor to maintain that standing, you know, in society or in your corner of the world.
Well, at that point, won't being a Bitcoiner be a prestigious quote unquote job?
True.
A Bitcoin influencer, you know?
Exactly.
You young guys, man, when you get to be my age, you're going to be like the OGs of OGs, man. People are going to look to you for guidance. They'll pay you to tell them what's up. It's a career move, man. You're a Bitcoiner.
Right. And I think this is kind of brings in a good point of how we as ardent Bitcoiners believe that this Bitcoin revolution is going to usher in the second renaissance. So we'll have a lot of people that are able to spend their own money doing things that they find, you know, that basically tickles them, and they can, you know, maybe we will see some crazy advancements in life and in areas that we can't even imagine today, and people doing their own pet projects that just blow our minds today and we can't even think about. So yeah, we'll you know, it's a crazy future to think of what's going to come with Bitcoin, because we're massaging the human creativity and intellect by unlocking a lot of people's creative endeavors. No longer does, you know, the majority of people have to be indentured servants to their state and to their current society or what have you. They can save and you know, like Jim said, in 10, 20 years, maybe, you know, we'll have a stupid stack of Bitcoins and we just start like funding some projects that help everyone, but also just, you know, scratch an itch for us. And that's kind of what is one of the angles that I love the most about Bitcoin. Because personally, I'm one of the people that, you know, I don't do what I feel I want to do for the rest of my life. But I do it because I know that it has a good effect on my family and the people around me. And, you know, it's enabling me to stack Bitcoin and live the life that I'm accustomed to. But hopefully in time, I'll be able to, you know, figure out something that I'm just as good at, and I wake up and I enjoy to do, and it doesn't feel like drudgery. So that's where I'm at. It's like, yeah, I'm going to grind for the next 10-ish years, if not longer, and just try to provide as much value as I can. And I'm with Jim. Like, I'll probably be working till the day that I die. But at a certain point, I hope that, you know, it won't feel like work. It'll just be something that I love. And yeah, you know, maybe that is being a Bitcoin influencer, as much as we laugh about it now. But, you know, I want to provide value. And I think that's what humans want to do. As I read in Human Action by Mises, it says, humans serve other humans to be served. And so that's just kind of the view that I look at life. You know, I'm here to provide as much value as I can. And hopefully I am doing that. And, you know, my stack of sats will pay off at the end of the day. You know, I'll get what's mine.
First of all, Optimus, you're doing a bang up job.
Oh, thanks. You're
providing tons of value. And second, I'm so excited for this future. Just the fact that we can have downtime, where we can work on our passion projects, where we can scratch our own itch, make the advancements that we want to make, that would, you know, push technology and society forward. I just couldn't be happier about it. I think with every halving that happens, we're gonna just uncover a new layer of scarcity that will kind of increase our time preference, that we're not going to be looking to the next day, to the next week, to the next month, but years ahead, generations ahead. Yeah, I couldn't be more excited.
Agreed. Anyone want to chime in? Okay, well, we got one more question over here, and then I'll ask Nick if we got some more in the Discord. But this one came from Justifer. And he said, it's a FUD question, but I heard quantum computers could break Bitcoin. Is this true?
No.
What? Because I was going to say the opposite.
Not true.
Well, yeah, quantum computing can't do shit. Like, Bitcoin's already got to a level of computing that, even if it somehow did, it wouldn't be beneficial to break it.
If you guys want to get a sense of why quantum computing is not going to work, not for a long time, if ever, go back to, you know, find on YouTube the Unconfiscatable Conference from last year, 2019, Peter Todd describing he's something he called a doer, which is like a cylinder of liquid nitrogen on his desk to cool down wiring to make it so he could run some kind of quantum thing. And he said you could touch the wire and send electrons down it and screw it up. Just touch it. He said it is so delicate, so hard, blah, blah, blah. Just listen to him describe it and you go, what? And he did it when he was 15 years old. The guy's like a savant, genius, crazy. But seriously, like, I thought, what? That's how technical quantum computing is. And Jimmy Song backs him up. I've heard him on Tone Vase's show talk about how insanely complicated and so far into the future before it could ever even come close to cracking a seed phrase.
Well, I mean, yes, quantum computing isn't really mainstream. It isn't really like that big a thing right now. And it could never be a thing. Always has that possibility. But whether it's quantum computing or something else will come down the line that will break our modern day encryption, which is what Bitcoin is based off of. If you think about what a computer is made up, you have to boil it down to that. So let's first look at what a computer is made up of. It's made up of bits, so zeros and ones. And yes, we can get more powerful computers, and we can keep improving silicon and keep improving silicon, making chips smaller and smaller and smaller to fit in circuits that base off of 0 and 1, 0 1, 0 1. But the whole concept of quantum computing is there's this thing called a qubit. So instead of 0 and instead of 1, there's 0, 1, and a number that's both at the same time, if that makes sense. It's really weird to think about, but whether it's quantum computing or something else, modern day computers are bound by the limitations of the bit we have. So if we were to come up with a new way of computing, which is what researchers are now going in the way of quantum computing, but it can't go in, it could go in that way or it could go a different way, but rethinking how computers work from that base structure could break encryption overall. So that's why people are scared of quantum computing, because in theory, that could just brute force all the encryption techniques we have everything built on today. That's why people are scared.
I got two things to say about this. I did a little bit of digging here too, and this was one of the topics that my Null Pointer group was hammering me about. And I just posted one of the articles about Honeywell's new quantum computer being twice as powerful as IBM. Twice as powerful, really not saying much in terms of being able to break a 12 word passphrase, but the first thing is that the cost per hour to run a quantum computer right now is $10,000 for this one, and this one is nowhere close to breaking a seed phrase. So you got to think of the cost benefit analysis. It's similar to a nation state trying to brute force 51% attack the network. It'll cost a lot more than it's worth right now if they try to use quantum computers to break it, even in the future. And then the other thing is what, to your point, Nicholas Nassim talks about all the time, it's Bitcoin is anti-fragile. So if this becomes a normal way for computing to work, where we're using ones and zeros and qubits, of the the whole Schrodinger's cat concept of a bit not being 0 or 1, then Bitcoin is just going to assimilate that, and the security around it is going to improve based on quantum computing as well, in my opinion.
I was going to say that. Thank you for saying that. I was thinking that exact thing, that our security will improve along with it.
Yeah.
I don't think we have anything to worry about, to be honest.
I'm no computer scientist, but I've heard Andreas Antonopoulos talk about it, and basically the gist of what he was saying was, at the time when quantum computers are able to break the Bitcoin encryption, we'll basically be able to, or hopefully by then we'll have new forms of encryption, and we can soft fork the Bitcoin protocol to use those forms of encryption. And then he also added that the quantum computer threat to Bitcoin is kind of like the Enigma machine of World War II, and how the Allies basically were able to break the encryption code of the Nazis, but they had to pick and choose their battles, and they didn't want to blow their cover that they had the code to break the Enigma machine or break the encryption with the Enigma machine. And so, if someone is or does have the capabilities of using a quantum computer, they most likely won't use it to hack the Bitcoin network, because if you're able to crack all of the encryption, like, we have a lot bigger issues around the world than just the Bitcoin network. That's breaking encryption for all the institutions of the world. But if they were to use it on the Bitcoin network, then we'd have a warning sign, and that warning sign would be Satoshi's million, or so we think, coins moving. And so we should have sufficient time to, you know, prepare like a patch or just make sure that we are stronger. And like Bobo said, Bitcoin's anti-fragile. And so it as a Bitcoiner, it's nothing that we need to worry about. But yeah, I mean, Jamie's right as well. You know, in the future, possibly it will crack the Bitcoin encryption. But until then, we're pretty good to go.
Yeah, I'm just that makes a lot of sense. I'm just curious of, like, you know how like modern day encryption wasn't invented exactly when computers were invented. They were invented along the way. So yes, when quantum computers become more and more of a thing, will it, I don't know what you call them, quantum computer scientists? I don't know what you call them. But will those people prioritize creating new encryption techniques first, or will they do something else first? Like that little like limbo of not having the quantum encryption created yet and having quantum computers being a thing at that same time, that weird limbo, I guess is what people are afraid of. But yeah, you guys are right. Once we have quantum computers, obviously, eventually we'll have new ways of encryption. So therefore, Bitcoin can be upgraded, anything can be upgraded. So yeah.
Yeah, that limbo period would be a little rocky and would cause a stir. But yeah, overall, I think we'd be good. Christopher, did you want to jump in?
Sure. As far as like, this isn't just a problem for Bitcoin if quantum computers can break encryption. This is a global problem where we've got secrets that are very worthwhile that we want to keep those protected for national security reasons or otherwise. It's likely that if a quantum computer could break that stuff, they would go after those things first that are much more valuable than Bitcoin, as hard as that is to imagine. And in addition, Bitcoin is a way of attracting really smart people. I mean, we get the quants or the quantum computer scientists to work on Bitcoin. I mean, like, we've got Peter Todd that chooses to spend his time on Bitcoin, making developments and moving the needle forward technology wise. So I think as far as fixes, when they come along, we'll see them first in Bitcoin before other things. But we'll be able to use other things, breaking as sort of our bellwether to, this is the time to move Bitcoin forward.
Let's go. All right. I'm trying to check if we have any more questions. Whoa. Okert put in billionaire Chamath. I cannot pronounce his last name. Said he bought 1 million bitcoins. Am I reading this correctly? 1 million BTC in 2013 and warns Bitcoin's success will spell global economic catastrophe. Well, I haven't read that article, but I think in some sense he may be right, and in another sense I want to disagree. Like the sooner that the Bitcoin price shoots up, like if it happens all at once and suddenly, then that in my mind would mean that a lot of people are running to Bitcoin because their society or their governments are failing. And so we will see a lot of, economic catastrophe, and we will see, maybe the next global depression, which we're basically currently in. It's just no one knows that we have the solution and we have the exit door. But the other part of me wants to say that, you know, if it happens a little slower and a little more gradually, and maybe not this next bull run, but maybe the one afterwards, where we're no longer the early majority or the early adopters, and we're getting into, you know, your grandmother, your aunt and uncle, and everyone's holding Bitcoins, then by then we can slowly roll out, you know, the UIs and the user experience to make sure that everyone's onboarded correctly. So I think it's kind of like a timing issue personally, but what do you guys think? Do you think that Bitcoin success guarantees an economic catastrophe?
A weird kind of, you know,
already
different
in
view about this, and it's that I feel like it's gonna really be up to the young world versus the old world, and I see that, you know, specifically talking about the younger generation. And to some extent, the older generations like me and Jim that you know have understood how the world has changed. Because at the end of the day, Bitcoin is are your janitors, your cleaners, your financial analysts, your people with that actually have their finger on the nuke. Like, you know, if you think about a president, he doesn't actually have his finger on the button. He has a code, and then there is a soldier somewhere in a bunker that's our age that has his finger on the actual button. And if those people, the people that are actually doing the work, not the older leaders and politicians and aristocrats, but the actual workers across the globe decide that they don't want to join this war, then I feel like this could be a peaceful revolution. In, I think it's Nick Carter that said that. I don't remember who wrote that piece. But I do feel like, you know, it's really up to the young world as to when they decide to stand up and say, you know, we're going to take your experience, guys, but we're not going to follow you down the dark path of war if we see a new path of peace ahead of us with Bitcoin.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Anyone else?
So you're saying this dude bought 1 million Bitcoin and is now telling people, oh, stay clear of it. There's gonna be a catastrophe. Yes. You know what? Sell me your Bitcoin. I'll buy them for you. Like, I'm not a fucking idiot. Like, I can see exactly what he's doing. Like, a million Bitcoin is that's a huge chunk of the supply.
No, he used to own 1 million Bitcoin.
He used to own it?
Yeah, he was a Facebook guy, Chamath Palihapitiya.
Did he post like the exact transaction of him selling it?
He hasn't sold. I'm not saying he said in a whether you like the guy Pomp or not, but he had a great interview with Chamath, and Chamath pointed out, yes, he used to own 1 million Bitcoin, but now he owns a little bit less of that, but he still owns a significant amount. He's still considered a whale, but he does venture capital now, and he only invests in tech. So that's why he's in Bitcoin. He helped create Facebook, I'm pretty sure. And then now he does interviews where he denounces Facebook. So he helped create the thing that he hates now, pretty much. It's kind of ironic.
Well, O'Kurt says in the chat that he says you should own BTC as a hedge. So he's not telling you not to.
Yeah, I think just like Plan B, he's super bullish. He just has a dark outlook on what's going to happen when hyper-Bitcoinization happens. Plan B had the same thing when he was doing it. Said that he, you know, when nation states get involved, there could potentially be dark times ahead when we start butting heads.
True.
Well, at a certain point, the nation state race will happen, and maybe Venezuela isn't the one to kick it off, but it seems like that's gonna happen in the pretty near future. I think within the next 4 years we'll start seeing some crazy stuff, at least as Bitcoiners, some things that are gonna blow our minds. Oh, and Justifer, actually, if does people want to chime in a little more? Because I forgot that I missed a question.
I was going to say something. I was thinking along the lines of what Bubba said, the younger generation. My hope is that the knowledge of how money works, and this gets beyond so many people, they don't even want to know, but if somehow you get through to enough people how money works, why Bitcoin is the best money ever, you know, whatever it takes to get them to understand that money didn't have to be made by a government and controlled by them, and it shouldn't be. And it's because of that that so many problems are on the planet. And if that simple message can get through, good money fixes a lot of things, and here's how it works, and here's why you should get some, you could have a potentially not so violent revolution. I still think for Bitcoin to be the world's unit of account, that's like the big goal, because that means everybody's using it as money to store value and to transact. So if it gets to that, I think that's generations away, personally. But I hope I'm wrong. I'd love to see it. Who knows? But I do think there's the potential, because of the internet and because of education and because once people see what Bitcoin really is, like we have, it changes. It changes not just their perspective on money. It changes their perspective on a lot of other things. You guys have to admit, your perspective on other things in life are affected because you now know what Bitcoin is.
I'd agree.
It's a huge effect. So
I'd agree.
That's how I hope it unfolds.
You reminded me of the meme, make money great again, fix the money, fix the world.
Definitely. I totally agree.
All right. We'll move on to the last question because we've been rolling for a little while. And this one came from our boy Joe Rogers. He's in the chat, and it says, what would happen if the world's internet was split and there were two chains? Joe, do you want to chime in? Because let's see if you're...
Hey, can you hear me all right?
Yes, sir.
All right. So adversarial thinking here. Just I was trying to think of, you know, what would be something that could screw up Bitcoin network. And I started thinking, well, what if the internet was cut in two between, you know, the hemispheres, the Eastern Western hemisphere, or even like China, you know, just completely segregate a big geographical portion of the earth from the other part, either via firewall or like physical attack on the internet cables. And then essentially, what if you had two chains going at once?
So it'd be like the capitalist free market internet and then like the commie socialist censored internet and how right. They interact.
Yeah. Or what if it wasn't the communist, for example? I don't know. What if there was just some disagreement that separated the world internet? Now you have two chains going.
Interesting.
The only way I could see that happening is in a world without satellites.
There you go. That's what I was just thinking.
All right.
Because, you know, but even if it does, like I was wargaming this out in my head, even if it was a world without satellites, so let's say they were able to block the signals from one hemisphere to the other, then it kind of becomes a similar situation to that article that Drew Bansal wrote about Bitcoin being on Mars. And it just, you know, becoming another planet almost that has its own scarcity and its own coins and its own circular economy. I think it would, I don't know what they would call it. You know, in that article they called it the Musk coin, and it behaved in a similar fashion in terms of pumping forever. And I think that might happen if the situation was realistic and there was no satellites and you're able to keep them separate.
Yeah, if folks weren't really able to talk to each other, I mean, any communication between the two internets would disrupt this, and it would just become one chain. But yeah, in the interim, I think it would create a fork. But then the algorithm is, they just you work on the chain with the most work on it already, And so it would become one, and all those transactions in the past would, you know, be unconfirmed. And then, man, that would be a great time to be a miner. So you would have all those transactions from the other part of the world to go through the mempool.
Yeah, I guess that was the part that I guess I got hung up on, is if you had two separate chains cooking and, you know, you had commerce happening on one of the chains, and then the chains somehow internet's restored, you know, suddenly you have one chain that's got a bunch of unconfirmed transactions. Seems like it would screw a lot of stuff up. But yeah, from the feedback I'm getting from chat and everyone else, sounds just kind of silly. You know, the fact is that you can't uninvent satellite technology, and, you know, we're going to have a way to work around global connections and communication.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, breaking the internet just to break Bitcoin, it's really something.
And this is a safe space, Joe. This is Bitcoin Kindergarten. There's no dumb questions. So we love you, bro.
Yeah, one love.
Well, do we have anything else in there, Nick? You checking?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah, I think we'll just wrap this episode up. So, yeah, thanks. Thanks for listening, everyone. And anyone want to say some last words? All right. Well,
thanks for coming out, everyone.
Yeah. Peace, love, Bitcoin. We'll see you next week, guys. Peace.
Bye, Bitcoin.
Peace. Bye, Bitcoin, exactly.
Peace, dudes. Thanks for hosting.
Don't buy that stupid shit you're about to buy, and buy Bitcoin instead. We're out.